Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia dealers of Ireland. Wherever the next 7 years bring you, Kia are with you all the way.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. This is the voice that opened yesterday's Liveline. It was the voice of Mary Fitzgerald. Like everyone on the programme the last few days, she deeply affected our listeners. Mary was 13. 1977 is the year when she was raped. No prosecution, no Gardaí involvement, or no Gardaí informed by any authority. The family, as Mary explained, were forced, and she was taking great issue with a number of issues, a number of points made, and indeed some of the language in the Mother and Baby Home Commission report, including that nobody was forced into Bessborough. Nobody was forced to give up their baby. Mary completely and totally rejected that, and she also rejected the general tenor, which is that families, where the fathers and families were the first culprits here, and they bear most responsibility. But as Mary pointed out, her family were forced by a coalition of the good and the great, so to speak, including the priest, told that she wouldn't be allowed, and Mary wouldn't be allowed at 13 into the local hospital to give birth. But this is Mary from yesterday's programme.
It's all a bit late down the line. There's a lot of harm, there's a lot of hurt, there's a lot of pain, and to this day it's still hard to get to the bottom of it all. It wasn't always the case, you know, like young people like myself were forced to go there. That wasn't the case in my situation. My parents did everything to keep me at home, and that was not allowed.
Bernadette, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. Bernadette, I know what age you are, because Mary, you were the baby born to Mary in Bessborough in 1977.
Yes, I was.
And how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Absolutely great.
Okay, and tell us about your life, and then what you discovered about your life, because as Mary pointed out yesterday, you were adopted fairly quickly.
Yes, I was at 6 weeks.
And do you know how you were then? Have you told what condition you were in? Or
yes, I was very, very poorly. Mm-hmm. I was only 5 pounds at 6 weeks.
Okay.
And my adopted mother came and collected me,
mm-hmm,
at 6 weeks old. And the nun sort of then preferred if I didn't go because I was so poorly. And she said, look, she'd take me anyway.
Okay.
And if I was poor enough, she'd bring me back. But she didn't.
So they
she fell in love with me straight away.
Brilliant.
I am so lucky. Really, and you know, I feel like I'm lucky, one of the lucky ones, you know.
Yeah, that the family.
She's the most kindest, caring, you know, person, mother in the world that you could ask for, you know.
Yeah.
And I just felt it's important for your listeners to understand that.
The parents that adopted you.
Yes,
Gave you a good life.
Gave me a good, brilliant life, yes.
And I'm sure you reciprocated as well. And as you say, which is bizarre, Bernadette, that they said to your mother, if you take this child and she doesn't get well, you can bring her back.
Yes.
God.
Yes.
Okay.
You
so
know.
Yeah. So take us through your life then, and to the point where you discovered you were Mary's baby.
Yes, well, I always knew I was adopted, and I was always told I was extra special. Yes,
yeah,
you know. I had no issues or problems with that whatsoever.
Right.
You know, and my family treated me all. I never felt excluded, or, you know, people go on about they don't feel like they're part of the family or included. I never had any of those issues whatsoever. I actually was made feel more important, if you get me.
Okay, great.
You know, it was all good. But Mary got in contact with me when I was 18.
Okay.
Through the Sacred Heart, but being so young, I just wrote back to her. I I was quite happy, you know. I didn't. You see, I was always told that Mary was 16, and like, to me, you know, they were a couple, and back in those times, that just wasn't acceptable, and that's what happened.
Okay.
You know, so I had no issues there, but when I did find out, it was fairly.
You were told that Mary was 16 when she gave birth to you.
Mary was 16. Okay. Yes. My mother wasn't told anything.
Okay. So you're with your parents. You get this letter through the order when you're 18. And what was going through your head? You're still very young. Talk about Mary being young when she had you. You're 18 and you've got to deal with all these dilemmas in a family.
That's what I'm trying to explain to you. But yeah. My mother, she had told me that was the way it was back in the time. And actually, every my birthday and every Christmas, she always, you know, thought and spoke of Mary, you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Brilliant.
She'd be saying, your birth mother, and I was out there probably thinking of you, and, you know. Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to explain. I honestly can say I have no bad feelings, or I never go through any
great
trauma about the whole thing, you know what I mean? Other than it's very sad.
Yeah.
You know?
And when did you discover that Mary was only 13 when she gave birth to you?
In 2000, and I met her, I think, in 2006 or 2007.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a shock, obviously, you know.
And the circumstances of your conception,
given that
Mary was raped by you.
Yeah, that's just, you know.
What did that sense shooting through your head? Though it sounds like you were so embraced by the love of your parents that.
Yeah, and I have to stress, it's not my parents. My father left when I was about 7.
Oh, so did he? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so it's your mother?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me, from what you're saying, Bernard, that from the get-go, even from the time when your mother was told, well, if Bernadette doesn't get better, bring her back. And as you say, your mother fell in love with you within hours, obviously, and rightly so. And,
yes.
But it sounds that your mother was such a warm, loving woman that you had support when you heard news like that. Your conceptive father who raped Mary.
Yes, 100%. You know, like she explains to me, you can't. It's tragic, but you can't change it.
Okay.
You know, and that is the reality of it. You know what I mean? And she supported me in every way she could. You know.
Yeah.
Because you have to learn in life, sometimes you can't change things, you know?
Yeah.
And me, like, to be honest, I try not to dwell on it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? And be happy with what I have, you know, and I am.
Yeah, you sound. And is your mother still alive, Bernadette?
She is. She's very much alive. Yes.
And as I said to Mary yesterday, Mary's a young woman. So your mother, I suspect, is a relatively young woman, as well. Did she say to you, Bernadette? Did she ever explain to you, in this? How she felt after, you know, that whole dilemma she was in, the nun said, if she doesn't get better, bring her back. And did your mother say it was your smile or your goo-goo or your...
She said I was never going back straight away, and she brought me straight up to Dr. Harty, I think, up at the time, and she told her to put me on milk and water, and I thrived then.
What a remarkable woman.
Yeah.
What a remarkable woman. And she never... She always said openly to you and others, this beautiful baby was adopted.
Yes.
Yeah.
There was no, you know, I actually felt proud, to be honest.
Okay, isn't that
it was, you know, it was something that I had my other friends didn't have. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, bar one. But,
There's always a bar one, is there? There's always a bar one.
I just wanted to stress that, like, you know, yeah, I am lucky.
You've done it so magnificently. And were you aware, Mary telling us yesterday, that when the family were forced to bring her up to Bessborough, that the priest went into one of the neighbours and started bad-mouthing the family, Mary's family, and the neighbour ran the priest and said, you'd be better off going up to help that family than giving out about them.
No, I wasn't aware of that now, to be honest, no. Yeah.
But it was 1977, it was the year you were born.
Yes.
And how... children, Bernadette, do you have... Can I ask, do you have children?
I do, yes. Okay. I have two. I have a boy and a girl.
Okay, well done. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, I haven't spoken to your mother, obviously, but she sounds through you a remarkable, remarkable woman.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry that your dad left after you were six or seven or whatever. But
Again, it's no issue because at the time he used to work away be back on weekends. And, you know, we were young. And to be honest, I didn't even notice that. You know, she just, like, she's amazing. You know what I mean? She just, you know.
And people.
Like, I had a wonderful, happy childhood. You know what I mean? I was, you know.
Great.
Yeah. Happy out.
People were very, as you heard, I presume, people were very taken by Mary yesterday.
Yes.
And for having the courage to tell that story.
Yes, very brave.
And to stand up and say, on the one hand, you said at least we got a 3,000-page report.
Yes.
But some of the language in it was wrong, some of the conclusions in it, this whole thing of that. Parents willingly almost gave their children. There was nobody was forced. There was no one was forced into these mother and baby homes. There was no forced adoption. It depends how you use the word force. Like, Mary's family felt they had no choice but to bring her up to Bessborough.
Yes, because she has explained that to me before.
Because
it was horrendous. It really was.
Because she'd been told at 13 years of age, that if she stayed in the family home, she would not be allowed go into the local hospital to have you, Bernadette. Which is just...
I know. Yeah.
Beyond, you're young.
I can't. Look, I'm looking down at my daughter now and she's, you know, she's not far from that. And I just think, oh my God, you know what I mean? You know, it's
okay.
You don't have the words for that, really. To be honest, you know what I mean.
It's beyond words, isn't it?
Yes.
If you look down, I don't know what age your daughter is now. Do you look down at your daughter that's near the age that Mary was when she gave birth to you, and to even you wouldn't even let your mind go in that direction. That child at that age, in 1977. Was forced to go into a mother and baby home, and we know all about the conditions in there. And then the baby taken off, or effectively she felt she'd no choice. Now, the family weren't supportive of bringing the baby back home either, as you know, Bernadette.
I know.
I don't know. What was it like to hear that then? You knew it and you...
Yes, you know, and obviously I'm aware of this and you know what I mean?
For people to put human faces and humanity on what was happening, the likes of Mary at 13, it just becomes incomprehensible. It really does. Have you thoughts or views on the reaction to the report and all the debates and the government apology and?
Oh, like, I don't know. As Mary said, it's a little too late, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know, do all the apologies and make up for really what happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? No, it's good. It's good. Women are speaking up.
Yeah.
It's 100% good. I'm with everything, you know?
Yeah.
I really am.
Okay.
But you know, I could be one of those babies.
Yeah.
You know, if I wasn't taken out of there 5 weeks, you know what I mean, you know.
And Bernadette, even I'm sorry for harping on this, but the mortality rate in Bessborough was very, very high in one year. Now, it was long before you were born, thank God.
In one year,
75% of the babies born in Bessborough died.
Yeah.
70, which is unfathomable. But because of the mortality, I want to ask you this question. Because they said to your mother, this baby is unwell.
Yes.
And if she doesn't become better, you can bring her back, which your mother never even contemplated for a second. But
no.
How quickly did you become well? Do you follow me?
Oh, I do. I suppose it was a week or two. So, you know what I mean?
So you weren't on death's door?
I wasn't on death's door, but like I was 6 weeks, I was 5 pounds. I wasn't. You know, she took it hard for me to take the bottle and stuff like that. Do you know
what
I mean?
What I'm thinking is, the nuns thought you were very sick, but all you needed.
Yeah.
Was the basic food that every child should have. So why were you so sick?
I understand.
That's my point.
I know.
And your mother and the doctor, your mother, as you say, she immediately went to the doc and said, listen, let's get going here. And he said, okay, whatever baby food, he immediately put you on. And within a few weeks, you're back on your back bouncing and lovable as you always were.
Yes, yes. If she didn't, I mightn't be here at all.
Yeah. Bernadette, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
No problem.
You were obviously surrounded, and your daughters are now as well. You were obviously surrounded in your life by incredible women.
Yes.
Incredible Mary, who gave birth to you.
Yes.
Your incredible mother, who reared you and still there in your life. Your incredible daughters, and they're blessed to be surrounded by all those incredible women, including yourself.
Yes.
Stay well. 1977, wasn't that long ago, as I keep saying to Mary yesterday.
So,
to a very young Bernadette, I'd say thanks, Bernadette, for contacting us, and stay safe and mind all those women around you as they...
And my son as well.
Good man, good lad, fair play. Now mind all, and you sound like you've inherited a lot of the beautiful, beautiful traits. The one that we heard from Mary yesterday, even in her voice, but two from your mother through her love and rearing for you and her standing by you from the get-go. Well done. Bernadette, thanks for making those points. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Stay well. Stay well.
Bye now.
Stay
well. Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at RT.ie. And we go back to 1977 again, the same year that Mary Fitzgerald was raped, 13 years of age, and gave birth to Bernadette, who you just heard before the break. And Bernadette was adopted within 6 weeks. She was very unwell when she was adopted, but became very well within a very, very short period of time, which is telling us something as well. Now, Kathy, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you? It's 1977. What happened?
What happened? In 1977, I had an unplanned pregnancy.
Okay.
As you know, that was possibly the worst thing that a young woman would be dealing with, or in the perception of society then. Mm-hmm. I was very lucky in that I had a supportive employer. Mm-hmm. Who arranged for me to get a transfer from the head office in Dublin down to Cork. And I was helped out by colleagues there who were nothing but kind.
Okay.
I had a bedsit that they had arranged for me. Mm. When my pregnancy became visible, I was given my notice.
Okay.
So I hopped on the back of the messenger lads. I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, but that's just on the back of a nifty-fifty, and with the help of the Evening Echo, went around until I found somewhere to live.
Wow.
And found a bedsit.
Okay, but did that landlady, I think you called her landlady, did she say, oh, I see you're pregnant?
No. It's just, I can't remember the exact words. It wasn't said, but it was obvious.
Okay.
And in actual fact, she did me a favour because it was a damp...
kip.
I'm not going to say kip, but it wasn't something I would have chosen for myself.
Okay.
But that's okay.
Okay.
So the next place I got was a lot nicer. It was in a different part of town, so I felt a bit safer there. The deal was that I could. The landlord was taking a risk because obviously, if I lived there with a baby, then he would have tenant rights issues.
Okay.
So the deal was that I would not bring a baby back there.
Okay.
So obviously I said, okay, I won't do that. So my baby was a week, 10 days overdue.
Okay.
And I was induced on the 16th, 10 days about after the due date. And I think I was 24, 26 hours or longer in labour. I was in the Urnville Hospital. And the only, shall we say, gentle, sympathetic gestures were made by an older lady who was in kind of working, cleaning and making tea and stuff like that. So she was very kind to me.
And Cathy, can I ask you, did your family know?
No, I didn't tell any of my family. I got this job transfer and I packaged it like, oh, I've got this great opportunity. Now, I would like to make very clear here.
Yeah.
I could have told my family.
Okay.
My father died in 1970.
Yeah.
And my mother would on no account have turfed me out.
Okay.
Now, she wouldn't have been jumping for joy about any of this. But my reasons for getting out of Dodge were that I didn't know what I was going to do. And I did feel shame.
Okay.
But the shame wasn't about being pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Or being obviously a young woman who had had sex with, may I say, the love of my life, my first love. But it was the stupidity of getting myself into that position, you know, lack of contraception, etc.
People should be reminded in the Ireland, unless I'm getting my dates mixed up, I'm not.
No, you're not.
In the Ireland of 1977, it was illegal.
Yeah.
It wasn't that there wasn't any contract. It was illegal to sell.
It was the accessibility would have been. I don't know if this is BMI, but you'll tell me if it is. So I had I'd gotten away with sort of watching when I was had a period, would be fertile. So I'd gotten away with that for a good while.
The Billings method, it was called, I think.
I know. I don't think I knew that's what it was.
I don't think it worked most of the time.
There you go. Well, it worked for a while.
But condoms were illegal.
Oh, no, they were illegal. We were both very young and we were both first time for each other, with each other.
Yeah.
So we hadn't a clue.
But just to remind young people of that time,
that
in 1977, guns were illegal, but condoms were illegal as well.
Condoms were illegal. I think there were possibly some, I don't know if the well woman was there then, but there possibly were some doctors that you could have got the pill from. But even between one's cohorts, be it work friends or other friends, you wouldn't actually have been that open about the fact that you were having sex.
Yeah.
Because girls didn't admit it. They didn't really admit it.
Okay.
Very few actually admitted it. So I personally have had no shame around the fact that I had sex.
Mm-hmm.
And rather nice it was too, with my first big love.
Great. Okay.
What I felt shame about was how it would reflect on my family.
Okay.
My father had, because my father had passed away when I was about 12, and my mother had some health issues, it would have been a case of, oh, Jesus, poor my mother. You know, that's even what you would be doing to your mother, you know, this dreadful burden, etc. And I'm just trying to think a bit more what else. And, maybe an element of pride that I wasn't going to walk down the cul-de-sac that I lived in the land of twitching net curtains, visibly pregnant, unless I was sure I was going to keep my baby.
Okay. So your baby is born after a very prolonged labour. I think you said all you got was tea and toast and the support of the soldier
and a little bit of a rub on the back. But it was I think I've locked out a lot of it, but alone, I have a figure of 36 hours in my head,
okay.
But I could be wrong. Anyway, then there was a mad panic about fetal distress and an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it was, you know, Jesus, get that girl down to the theatre.
Okay.
So that's what happened.
For a C-section, sorry.
An emergency C-section. Yeah. And very obvious concern for the fetal distress. So that was done. Mm-hmm. And when I came to, I think I was in a smallish ward.
Okay.
And I asked about my baby. So I had given birth to a beautiful baby boy.
Oh, congratulations.
And he had a good weight and that. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But I wasn't allowed to see him. So the approach was... Oh, no, I wasn't... You know, I was down there and I think that he was in the natal unit.
Mm-hmm.
As not because he needed it medically, but because it was keeping him separated
because
from
he was
me, because yeah. I possibly was going to adopt, so therefore I shouldn't bond with him. So I then kicked up a rumpus, I'm afraid, a rather large rumpus, so that they had to shut me up. They wheeled me up in a wheelchair to see him.
Great.
So my memory of that first time was just my tears falling on his little head. And he was gorgeous. And then just that whole feeling of, what am I going to do? I can't give this baby. I can't give my son up.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was all over the place. Don't let me get stuck on those kind of, because I can get into too much detail.
Okay, you're fine. So, so what happened? Your baby's name, for a start.
My baby's name was and is Damien John.
Okay, and what happened, Damien John?
What happened, Damien John, was about a week after I gave birth, I had seen him about three times. He was collected from the hospital. It was the Arundel Hospital. He was collected by a social worker from a... Will I give the name of the adoption
of course,
society?
Yes,
yeah. By a social worker. I also have her name, but I won't say it.
Okay.
St. Anne's Adoption Society. Yes. By a young woman who was the social worker there. Now, I had met her. I would say we had spent at the maximum 10 hours in each other's company.
Okay.
But she formed... rather detailed opinion about me at that point, which I found out much later.
Mm-hmm.
So Damien was taken and I was told that St. Anne's had their own nursery in Bessborough, or that they had an arrangement with Bessborough. So my understanding was that's where he would be cared for.
Okay.
Obviously. So, and I trusted... I trusted what they were telling me, obviously.
So your understanding was that he was taken to Bessborough?
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. Yeah, okay. He was definitely was, but that there was a special arrangement.
Okay.
Now, at that point, I didn't know that in Bessborough, the unfortunates, and I mean that as a word of acknowledging that I was very lucky that I hadn't had to be a resident there. The young women there looked after their own babies.
Okay.
So in hindsight, you think, oh, you know, well, who looked after my baby when they were busy scrubbing floors or whatever, demeaning tasks they were expected to do, as well as maybe seeing their babies for an hour or whatever it was every day. So Damien was there. I went back to Dublin maybe 3 weeks after I had Damien, and I stayed with a friend for a week. And I wasn't long home before I told my brother and sister, but I was holding back a bit on telling my mum, basically because she had some complex health issues.
Okay.
She would have been... she was in and out of paths a lot.
Okay,
she
I understand.
Was what they would have called
and what became what
at that time?
Insofar as you knew then, Cathy, what became of your son, Damien?
My son was in. He was in the nursery there. there was contact between between the social worker and I. And I went down and signed a form, I think it was a Form 10 it's called, but I think that's only the first mm-hmm. official document that allowed the baby to be in a pre-adoption or in a fostering okay. situation.
And when did you...
Because I hadn't...
Okay, when did you discover that he... When did you know that he was adopted? When did you come to believe that he was adopted?
Oh, I was given the impression that he was adopted in about October.
Okay, of the year.
And I honestly can't remember the date. But,
okay,
that
doesn't...
But it would have been... His name was Paul, and he had been adopted, and he was doing very well.
Oh, they changed his name?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the impression I had was that the adoptive parents had called him Paul.
Okay.
So it was a bit of a whitewashing of the Damien, you know?
Okay.
Damien, John, and I'm trying to be subtle because not... I'm trying to be confidential for other people who are involved.
The call from the social worker that changed everything.
I was planning to go down. I went down. I'll just say this. I'll try and be brief.
Yeah,
I went down a couple of times after I moved to Dublin, and while I was still in Cork, I was making efforts to go and see him.
Okay.
To see Damien. And I saw his dad and I saw him once in Vespera, and there was someone in the room all the time. We were being watched, and it was an awful feeling. So we managed to get a couple of pretty bad photos, if I'm honest, there. And that is all I had.
Okay.
And I suppose when I got back to reality and I was looking into where would I live, how would I do it? How would I keep him? I wanted to keep him, but I just was looking at, I think my salary was £31 a week. I don't know if that was gross or net. How would I find somewhere to live and keep working and pay for a childminder? But there was also, genuinely, my mum would never have closed the door in my face.
Yeah,
but
I
did
that
not
point.
Want...
Yeah, okay.
But there wasn't.
There wasn't. Now I know Frank Klusky in particular brought in it was called unmarried mothers. That awful phrase. They're mothers. They're not unmarried. Married single.
The allowance.
Mother. Yeah.
I think that was £11.
Yeah, but that as I said, it was very. That was a recent support, but that was.
£73 that came in.
Yeah, but that was very, very small. This awful phone call you got from the social worker.
Yeah. So I was back and. And I had tried to see Damien in Cork a number of times. And also the day I went down to sign the Form 10, which I think was the 18th of October. And every time that I tried to see him, and I was asking to see him in the Adoption Society,
yeah.
because Vespera was just awful.
Yeah.
And it was all, that's a shame. He has an infection. And a sister, Anthony, couldn't possibly let him go out. So it was all, if you want to see your son, you go to Vespera. Beginning, middle and end of story. So at one point I did say, isn't it a strange coincidence that any time I want to see him, there's a convenient
obstacle
infection or whatever.
Yeah.
Did not go down well. So the relationship, I wouldn't call it that, the social worker that I was dealing with,
mm-hmm.
I didn't fit into the norm because A, I was working, I had my own place to live,
and you spoke up,
I spoke confident
enough.
That did not go down well at all,
okay.
at all.
And was she the same social worker who contacted you to tell you what happened,
yes,
Damien?
Yes, yeah. No, she really didn't know me well. She described.
And what age was Damien when she rang you?
He was 10 and a half weeks old. And I was told that he was with his adoptive parents and he had been found dead in his cot. That he had most likely that it was sudden infant death syndrome. God. You know, a cot death.
And were you allowed to go to the funeral?
Oh, well, the funeral, oh dear, no, that was an issue. I got a phone call from a priest. I do know his name, but I'm not going to mention it. Mm. And he was involved with St. Anne's Adoption Society, and telling me that, you know, we were talking about funeral arrangements. And I said, yeah, okay, well, I'll let you know what train we'll be on, because Damien's dad and I were going down.
Okay.
So he said, oh, no, no, there's no need for that. And I said, pardon? And I said, we will be there. We want to be there.
Yeah, of course.
And he said, the parents don't want you there. So I said something to him like, well, as far as I'm concerned, I haven't signed any final forms.
Yeah.
So I'm his mother and his father. We will be there. But I have no problem with his adoptive parents being there.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going. No one is going to stop me being there. So it didn't go down well, and I didn't give a damn.
And did you? You did go, did you, Cathy?
Yes, we did. Yeah. And we went. He had the post mortem. I think was the day after he died, and we went down probably. 25th of November.
Oh,
well. So we went down.
Go ahead. Sorry, you went down.
Yeah, we were picked up by the social worker. We were brought to a funeral home, and that's where Damien was in his, you can imagine, a white coffin like a shoebox.
Yeah.
And it was one of the few gestures I felt of compassion or empathy, and I really mean few, that he was actually dressed in an outfit that my best friend had given me for him.
Okay.
And when she came down to visit me in hospital, she was not allowed to see Damien. And
take us to 2011, Cathy, when you decided.
We were there for his burial.
Yeah.
In St. Finbar's ceremony.
Okay.
A cemetery. Yeah. And I had a note that I still have of the location. I think it was plot number, number.
Well done.
And something else. So many years went by. I moved abroad in 79. And I don't know how aware of it at the time I was, that I was just getting away from this judgmental, skewed, misogynistic society, but I was gone. And obviously I maintained my contacts. So I moved back here in 2005.
Mm.
Yeah, you know the way there was a Celtic tiger?
Yeah.
The tiger had, run out of its tank or whatever. And, we moved back in 2005. And I didn't expect it would be a big issue for me. But at that time, I suppose, you know, there was the Industrial Schools Report, the Ryan Report, endless reports. So basically about people who had been othered by the elites, those who had power.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Government, church, institutions, that whole vested interest groups. So that did affect me. And
why did you decide to contact the cemetery? Because you were at the funeral, you knew your child was born.
What was niggling
at you?
What happened was I got in touch with the HSE.
Okay.
Or TUS, I can't remember what it was named.
But what was in your head? What were you trying to find out?
I just wanted to find out more about what had happened.
Okay, of course.
Who made what decisions?
Did you ever get the results? Were you ever given the results of the post-mortem on Damien?
I was at the beginning of December.
Okay.
I got moving on it. Damien's anniversary is the 23rd of November.
Okay.
And something galvanised in me. I cannot explain it. Around that time.
So you did get the post-mortem results?
Oh, I did, yeah.
But you
went down...
Sorry,
yeah, go on.
But you contacted the cemetery because you wanted to find out about the adoption. Had you been formally adopted? You wanted to find out about the adoptive family? Or you wanted to find out about the process? Or you wanted
to? Yeah, I wanted to know more about the process and the other frills around it.
Okay.
So, because he had been, as far as I was concerned, his adoptive parents were the unfortunate people who walked in one morning when he was 10 and a half weeks old and found their beloved child.
Yes, good point.
Dead, and I carried that for 34 years.
Well said, yeah.
That was a huge part of how I thought. You know, was I lucky that I hadn't kept him? Would he have died anyway, etc.? But I'm so aware of that. So I think I was probably onto the HSC first, HSC/TUSLA. I wasn't feeling, you know, there was a little bit of, that person will be in next week. But I wasn't waiting for anything till next week. So I did get in touch with the cemetery, and they said they had no record for a burial on that date.
Wow. That you had attended.
For that child.
You knew happened. You knew happened.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And
yeah,
you knew, because it was an open coffin, you knew who was going into that grave and
We saw Damien. Yeah, we saw Damien in an unopened coffin. We were there when
So the graveyard have no record.
Did
the HSE or TUSLA, as it was then, did they have any record of who adopted Damien?
Damien was... What transpired, Joe, is that Damien was never adopted.
Wow.
It was an absolute lie. When Damien was 6 and a half weeks old, he was examined by a doctor and he was considered, in that nebulous phrasing of the day, he was not thriving. He actually had weighed 3,600 grams when he left the hospital on the 24th of August.
Right.
And on the 18th of October...
2 months later.
He weighed only, am I being pedantic now? He had only gained 90 grams.
Good God.
Yeah. So, obviously, that's not right.
So that resonates,
happened, but this is after I got the documents in my hands, on my file.
Yeah.
And that would have been the beginning of December. Now, there were numerous phone calls, etc. So... When I got the documents, that is when I discovered... No, I may have discovered it before, but I definitively discovered, when I had the documents, that Damien had been moved from the nursery in Bessborough on the advice of a doctor around the 18th of October, because he was, you know, not thriving, severe rash, very thin... And the advice was that he should go to a foster, either mother or family. I haven't got the...
So the people at the funeral, the couple that found him dead, were his foster parents?
His foster parents.
And did you ever find them, Cathy?
Oh, yes, I did. Did not know who they were dealing with. So what I did was... I've got some timelines bits mixed up on this.
Yeah, don't be worrying about timelines.
Okay,
it's totally understandable.
So
and details are important to you, so excuse me.
Yeah, they're kind of over-important when you're involved. I realise that. So what I did was, when I got the documents, that's when I firmly discovered that he had been fostered. So the letter I got from the Adoption Society telling me on the 24th of October, he's doing really well, he's thriving, was a load of lies. He was obviously moved.
And that couple that were at the funeral?
There was no couple.
Oh, they weren't there?
What I found out, I'll try and be a bit more specific. What I found out, when we got to Cork, there was no sign of the adoptive parent.
Ah, okay.
Okay? So I felt, that's your choice.
Yeah.
And we didn't put any barriers in their way, but okay, if that was their choice, oh, God help them, they're probably too upset.
Mm-hmm.
So for 34 years, that is what I believed based on what I had been told by a social worker and a priest.
And what was the truth of it?
The truth was that Damien had to be moved out of the nursery in Bessborough because he, as I say, he had only gained, I think, 90 grams in weight.
Yeah.
So he was severely malnourished.
Yeah, but who said to the foster parents, you can't go to the funeral?
The priest and the Adoption Society.
Oh,
the priest
goodness.
And the Adoption Society. So, of course, if they had been there, then it might have come up.
You might have come up, I shouldn't be finishing. It might have come up that there was lies being told left, right and centre.
Yeah, yes. Left, right and centre. Yeah. So I knew nothing about it, nothing about that. But when I got my paperwork together. Now, let me just go back to St. Finbar's very quickly. They were really helpful on the phone. But I suppose they were lovely. They were really helpful. And then at one point, they suggested he might be in a certain plot. And that was a name that I had never heard of. So I was then thinking, was he buried with his adoptive parents, but nobody told me?
Mm-hmm.
And was his body moved? And it was the whole, you know, just the lack of clarity. I think, no, this can't be right. I know where he was buried. And I have a piece of paper that I scribbled the details down on.
Yeah.
I was still in work. This was in 1977 because I had specifically asked for it at the time. So I think I managed to dig that out. And
I suspect you also sought out the foster parents. Did you ever meet them, that couple that were equally misled?
Unfortunately, I tracked them down. And the lady who would have been the foster mother, it was a family, she unfortunately had passed away.
Okay.
But her daughter was then living in the house, and her daughter was 12 at the time, and she remembered Damien.
Okay.
And the kindest thing I ever heard was not from any of the, you know, social workers, priests, any of that shower, and I'm saying shower because that's what I mean, was from the lady, the foster mother's daughter. And she told me she remembered Damien splashing in the bath and laughing the night before he died.
Okay.
That's
a memory. That's a nice memory.
Yes, it is. I've clung to that.
There's nothing nicer than babies splashing in baths.
Yeah, exactly.
Discovering the joy. And,
yeah, exactly. So that was, that, you know, that just lifted my heart, I have to be honest.
Okay.
It's not an awful lot to be left with, but anyway.
And Cathy, you mentioned quite a number of times Damien's father and the fact that the two of you were together.
Yeah, we were. I sound like Ross Geller from Friends. We were on a break when I got pregnant.
Okay.
And it would seem to me that we over-celebrated my 19th birthday.
Okay.
So that's the background of that.
Okay.
So I think the fact that we were we were not still going with each other.
Yeah.
Even though we obviously were still in touch, et cetera.
Okay.
And we're still in touch now.
Okay, that's good.
You know, so I think that contributed to my feeling that this was my problem and my problem alone to deal with.
Well, it's an incredible story, an incredible story of subsequent deceit and lies, and not just you being misled, but the foster family being misled as well, told you shouldn't go to the funeral because they didn't want want the two of you to meet because of what would be revealed.
Yeah. But the lady's daughter told me that her mum was, you know, absolutely worried, like, you won't get any more foster children.
Oh, God.
And obviously I was eyeball to eyeball with the social worker and the priest while we were there. So that is what they're capable of.
Okay.
That was kind of part of the motivation of why I got in touch.
Yeah.
It was after the two sisters were on the other day who were talking about they were desperate to find their siblings' resting place.
That's right, the twin that who died.
Yes.
And they only discovered about the twin 4 weeks ago, believe it or not.
Yeah.
In
so, Hanno, I do. Okay. I was listening to
so,
I was listening to
Kat,
Joe, nothing surprises me.
Okay. Well, that's
nothing.
That's a good way to finish.
I know. Okay.
Take your time. Is this the first time you've told the story in such detail?
No. I have to. I have good friends.
No, but I mean publicly.
Some of them would.
I mean
but
publicly.
This really, yeah,
yeah
really.
Yeah, yeah.
I went once to a birth mother's support meeting that Bernardo's run.
Private, yeah.
And this would have been around 2011-12.
Okay.
And it was the first time, you know, that I was ever in a room with so many women who had been in the same situation.
Yeah,
but I just didn't, in a sense, because I was able to be independent. I had a job. I had my own bed set when I wasn't, you know, being thrown out.
You were incredibly resourceful for a 19-year-old.
I was, yeah.
Fair play to you. God rest Damien for a start, and he'll never be forgotten. And in his short life, he'd good people around him in the main, like yourself, and indeed.
Well,
not
in the main for three of his 10 weeks.
Okay.
And the rest of his time, and you can imagine the guilt that I trusted them.
Yeah.
Oh, we have the nursery; that's where it'll be.
Okay.
You know, I trusted them, and. You know, like a fool. Now, I had no respect for any of them.
Okay.
I am.
In best.
I was already. No, I. You know, I. The priests, the Catholic Church, the lot. I wouldn't have been as capable of intellectualizing as I am now.
Yeah.
But the misogyny, the oppression, that was of women.
The phrase you used earlier on, the othering. Of
yes.
you by the elite, as they're called.
Yes,
the church,
absolutely.
The state,
the people with power.
The coalition.
What comes up for me is, as I say, I spent 34 years often thinking, really, on his birthday, on his anniversary, and on the odd time in between, of that poor couple who had waited and waited to adopt my beautiful son, concerned about them.
Yeah. Okay.
And they never existed. So, getting the paperwork together and getting that. Now, the anger I felt, as you can imagine, I thought, what a shower of lying, obviously, B-word. And I found out where the priest was, and I found out where the social worker was in 2011. And it was, you know, I was ready to get in my car and bring a bloody good camera. But I decided against it. I tried to take, a lot of deep breaths so that it wasn't just an emotional gut response, that whatever I would do with this information would be done in a thoughtful manner. I also decided they were beneath my contempt and in energy.
Yeah.
And if you're capable of doing... Obviously, what they did to women and girls in mother and baby homes, you know, that's one thing. If they're capable of those kind of things, they're beneath contempt.
Okay.
And for me, it was a decision.
Well done.
I just decided there's nothing to be really gained, and I knew it wouldn't be good for my mental health. And I had other stuff going on at the time because my husband was very ill.
Okay.
But anyway,
Kathy, God rest Damien, I admire your get-go from a very young age. Well done. And kind regards. Has your mother passed on, Kathy, your own mother?
Yes, yeah. Oh, no, okay. I mean, I told my mum eventually and all that.
Okay.
At no point would I have been ostracised by my family.
I know.
And I really hope, would you, if you'd be kind enough to let me just... say these, and then I will stop.
Of course, you're fine.
Government reaction is just more of the same old blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
The arrogance of them to include all society is responsible. Spin. They've had plenty of time to spin it. They've had the report since October. Some of the mother and baby home members seemingly only got the printed out version of the report today.
Yeah.
This is what Catherine Connolly said on Claire Byrne this morning. But she said, this, as I said, what have I got here? Include, you know, include all of society as responsible.
You object to that as well.
Pardon?
You object to that characterisation
as
well.
Oh, absolutely. What a convenient way to try and spread the blame. Because you can see, if you spread it across enough elements, then it gets thinner, doesn't it? Because then who is responsible gets thinner.
Well said and well put.
Okay, but there's that.
I have to just
bear with me. I promise I'll finish.
Yeah.
All of society is responsible. Spin, untrue. Spread the blame. Okay, Catherine Connolly, anyone who's interested in this, please check out what she said in the Dáil and what she said on the Claire Byrne show this morning. She's a very articulate woman. One of the things she said was, this report and how it's been handled and leaked. Oh, whoops, I wonder how that happened. Abuse on abuse. And she said, and I'm paraphrasing some of what she said because it reflects what I think and what I know. I am not responsible. The people I know are not responsible.
Good point.
My family are not responsible.
Okay.
The report is based on limited information, on limited testimonies, and on a limited number of homes. Therefore, it does not in any way really reflect in an all-encompassing way. Well, definitely not in an any way encompassing way what went on. The sample base of testimonies is not enough. It wouldn't pass any
okay.
research.
Your own story today, Cathy, has, I think, given more examples of real lived experience that people went through, which was absolutely shameful in so many ways. Cathy, thanks again, and kind regards to you and your family, and remembering dear Damien as well. Thanks, Cathy.
I have four more lines.
Okay.
The question I will say is, who held the power? And we know it was the church, the state stroke government, the local government, the priest, the odd doctor. You know, come on, let's call a spade a spade. They were bullies. And they bullied those with less power than them because they were of little or no consequences, of no consequence to them. They're others, they're them, possibly, you know, economically, socioeconomically less power and structure and relevance.
Okay.
So those people were not of any use because the elites are among themselves. And The babies were seen as a commodity, a disposable. Or stroke useful commodity for generations because, of course, they could be sold or trafficked and call it what it is, human trafficking.
Okay. The commission didn't accept that at all. But that just leads us into another. There's so many angles on this, Cathy, and you've brought up so many. So I really, really appreciate you. Cathy, thanks again, and stay well. Thanks, Cathy.
Okay.
Thanks indeed.
And thank you for giving me this chance to say a word or two.
It's a privilege. It's a privilege. Thanks.
You're
Cathy.
Doing a good job.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye bye.
I never thought I'd be speaking
Talk
to
Joe. On 1850 715 815. Bye.
Adrienne Adams, you did give evidence to the commission.
Yes, I did, Joe. Yeah, I did.
What was that like, Adrienne?
It was grand. It was very, very, you know, it was very informal. I was in Dunboyne in 1987. So, you know, it was a very different time to your last listener and your listener before you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was very brief. I gave evidence. And then I heard nothing more until the before Christmas. I got a letter in the post saying if I wanted my details left in the report, was that okay? And not to respond if that was okay. So I didn't respond. But I never knew anything about the webinar that took place. And I was never sent a link for the document. And I was shocked to hear that it was only 500 people came forward. So it's very little people, really, to give evidence.
Because it was 58,000. Well, I know at the time and age, and
yeah.
It was intergenerational. It was between 1920 and the 1980s.
Yeah.
And do you know anyone else who went forward, Adrienne?
No, I'm the only one. I know myself, but I know I spoke to someone that was in Dunboyne with me before I gave evidence, just to sit with her and say, look, is this what I'm saying? Is this how you experience it as well?
Okay.
Because it's so long ago, it was over 30 years. And she said, yeah, Adrian, that's because we shared a room together, but she wasn't going to give evidence. But I know lots of women that have had children, have been in baby mother homes and would never talk about it.
And how did you find the experience with the commission?
The commission was fine. It was very gentle. Yeah, it was very. There was two people that interviewed me.
And were you given a transcript of your interview?
No.
Okay.
Nothing.
And have you managed? There is a chapter in the commission report on Dunboyne. Have you managed at this stage to go through it? Oh, it's still early days.
No, I've just gone over briefly the short report at Dunboyne. Well, I was very lucky.
Yeah, but even the short report, the executive report is 200 pages, the executive summary. Okay, Adrienne, thanks indeed. That's Adrienne Adams. And Anne Toner, you went to the commission as well.
I did, Joe, yes.
And how was that?
I must say they were very courteous and very compassionate, and considering the circumstances, it was not so bad. Okay. I had expected it to be worse.
And you had a son in St. Patrick's on the Navan Road, Pellettstown, as it was known, one incarnation, in 1970. And what is your reaction to the report and this debate that's going on now?
I haven't read the report fully. Yeah. It would take me a while before I could face doing that after the last few days. But I was a bit concerned with the fact that the commission, and very understandably so, they are legal people and have to be careful with words. They are not allowing the term forced adoption. I do think we need to find another term for what happened to women that is in line with the reality of what they went through. Because I have been thinking about this lately, and when I realised the way we were, and I think most women would have experienced the same, the terror and the isolation and the loneliness of the experience.
So, Anne, were you given any support in saying, keep your child?
At no time in my whole experience was it ever suggested.
Okay.
I thought from the moment I get pregnant that I'd have to pay for my sin by giving up my baby. I thought that was my atonement.
My God.
That was complete. I never even considered anything else. And I thought of the shame it would bring on my family. Yeah. And for that reason, I felt to save them any further hurt or embarrassment or loss of standing, that I'd have to
you're saying, as far as you're concerned, your adoption was forced. It wasn't
effectively forced.
Deceptively forced.
I don't know how you could say that somebody who is in a state of complete distress, loneliness, isolation, and the way we were. Being in a mother and baby home was an experience that was like being de-selfed. It was so humiliating and so like a prison. And I hardly spoke to any other mothers in the baby home for some reason, even though I'd normally be able to talk well enough. But it was like you weren't psychologically effective enough at that stage to be capable of making a decision or to be capable of making your own decision.
I want to stay with that phrase for a sec, and deceptively forced. Back after this.
Okay.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And as you say, Anne, you were in 1970 in St. Patrick and Navan Road, and you were pregnant, and you believed the situation you were in was that your baby was deceptively, you were forced to decept. You were deceptively forced to give up your baby.
Effectively forced, Joe, in the sense that, effectively forced.
Okay, that's a better phrase.
If you put somebody out of society, isolate them, humiliate them.
Okay, well, that would be wouldn't that be a better word for the commission to use? Effectively forced.
Yes, it would go into
a mother and baby home. Effectively forced. And what happened to your child? Was it a boy or a girl, the baby?
A boy.
Okay.
Yeah, a boy.
And did you have any subsequent contact? Or?
I was with him for 7 weeks, Joe, and I was very, very bonded with him. Yeah. Very bonded. And I absolutely took to being a mother like a duck to water. It was the happiest I've ever been in my life.
Oh, God.
I wasn't just bonded, I'd say I was welded. I loved him. Bottomlessly. I was with him for 7 weeks. My father, and I'm not saying that my father was a good man, but he was the boss of the family, very much the boss. You didn't argue with him.
And what happened to your baby boy?
He was adopted.
And what happened subsequently, do you know?
For the sake of his privacy, I won't say too much about that, Joe. Hope you don't mind. He was adopted into a good family.
Okay.
And I have met him, and he's a darling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And as you say, what an incredible use of language, Anne, to say I wasn't bonded to him, I was welded to him. It was the happiest period of my life being a mother for those seven weeks. And thanks indeed for your time, and thanks for contacting us. That's Anne Toner. I'm nearing the end of the programme again, unfortunately, with too many people to get to.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Thanks to the survivors. Apologies to those who we didn't have time for today. We will tomorrow and beyond. Rebecca Meehan produced, and Ray Darcy is next.